Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Political Questions and Foreign Affairs Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On March 26, 2012, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Zivotofsky v. Clinton, also known as MBZ v. Clinton. This case presented two questions concerning U.S. citizens born in Jerusalem. First, whether courts can enforce a federal statute directing the Secretary of State to, if requested, record the birthplace of such citizens on passports and consular reports as Israel. And second, whether that statute improperly interferes with the president's constitutional authority to recognize foreign sovereigns. The lower appellate court dismissed the case on the grounds these issues presented a non-justiciable political question. By a vote of 8-1, the Supreme Court vacated the appellate court's decision and remanded the case for further proceedings. In an opinion joined by Justices Scalia, Kennedy, Thomas, Ginsburg, and Kagan, Chief Justice Roberts indicated that federal courts, quote, are fully capable of determining whether the statute may be given effect or instead must be struck down in light of authority conferred on the executive by the Constitution, end quote. Justice Sotomayor filed an opinion concurring in part and concurring in the judgment, in which Justice Breyer joined as to part one. Justice Alito filed an opinion concurring in the judgment, and Justice Breyer filed a dissenting opinion. To discuss the case, we have John Elwood, who is a partner at Vizen & Elkins Appellate Group. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Elwood.
If anyone needed further proof that Chief Justice John Roberts is the judicial minimalist he claimed to be during his confirmation hearings, they got it last week in Zivotofsky versus Clinton. The court dodged, at least for the moment, the main separation of powers question presented by the case over which branch has authority to designate the country of birth on a U.S. passport, and resolved only the question of whether the case was justiciable. Since the founding of Israel, every president has declined to recognize Jerusalem as part of any country. With both Arabs and Israelis claiming sovereignty over the city, the United States has taken the position that the status of Jerusalem is to be negotiated as part of a Middle East peace deal. Congress, however, has tried to force a different policy, passing legislation in 1995 seeking to move the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem and, in 2002, requiring the State Department to allow United States citizens born in Jerusalem to list Israel as their place of birth on their passports. President Bush, in a signing statement on the passport legislation, construed the provision as advisory, saying that it would otherwise, quote, impermissibly interfere with the president's constitutional authority to conduct the nation's foreign affairs, unquote. Both the Bush and Obama administrations have refused as a matter of policy to list Israel as the place of birth for U.S. citizens born in Jerusalem. Menachem Zivotofsky was born in Jerusalem 9 years ago, the child of American parents who emigrated to Israel. His parents applied for a U.S. passport for him, and when the State Department listed his birthplace simply as Jerusalem, with no country listed, the boy and his parents sued for enforcement of the federal law that allows them to list the place of birth as Israel. After some wrangling about standing that is not relevant here, the district court dismissed the complaint on political question grounds. A divided panel of the D.C. Circuit affirmed, saying that the State Department's decision to record the place of birth as Jerusalem and not Jerusalem, Israel, implements the president's, quote, exclusive and unreviewable constitutional power to keep the United States out of the debate over the status of Jerusalem, unquote. Judge Harry Edwards concurred in the judgment, agreeing with the majority that under the Constitution, quote, the executive has exclusive and unreviewable authority to recognize foreign sovereigns, unquote. But rather than dismissing on political question grounds, Edwards would have held the provision unconstitutional and concluded that Zivotofsky had no viable cause of action. Zivotofsky sought certiorari to review whether the political question doctrine deprives a federal court of jurisdiction to enforce the passport statute. But while the court granted cert, it also added a second question, whether the passport provision impermissibly infringes the president's power to recognize foreign sovereigns. The court's decision to add the second question suggested the court was poised to determine the proper roles of the two branches in this foreign policy context. But the court wound up dodging that question. In a succinct opinion for six members of the court, Chief Justice Roberts concluded that the political question doctrine does not bar judicial review of Zivotofsky's claim. The court reasoned that, quote, the federal courts are not being asked to supplant a foreign policy decision of the political branches with the court's own unmoored determination of what United States policy towards Jerusalem should be. Instead, Zivotofsky requested the court enforce a specific statutory right, To resolve his claim, the judiciary must decide if Zivotofsky's interpretation of the statute is correct and whether the statute is constitutional. This is a familiar judicial exercise, unquote. Indeed, because the interpretation of the statute was not in dispute, the sole question is whether the statute is unconstitutional. Resolution of that matter, the court said, required examining the textual, structural, and historical evidence put forward by the parties regarding the nature of the statute and of the passport and recognition powers. That, the court concluded, is what courts do. But because neither the district court nor the D.C. Circuit passed on the constitutional question, the court was without the benefit of thorough lower court opinions to guide its analysis on the merits. Because the Supreme Court is a court of final review and not first view, the court declined to pass on the matter in the first instance and remanded to the D.C. Circuit for further proceedings. The opinion was joined by Justices Scalia, Kennedy Thomas, Ginsburg, and Kagan. Justice Sotomayor wrote a separate opinion concurring in part and concurring in the judgment. She began with an exposition of how she viewed the six Baker versus Carr factors and how they each affected the court's ability to resolve cases, which she said involved an inquiry, quote, more demanding than that suggested by the court, unquote. Justice Breyer, who dissented, joined this portion of her concurrence. In a portion of the opinion Breyer did not join, Justice Sotomayor agreed that the political question doctrine was not implicated here, essentially for the reasons stated by the majority, but said that it was possible to imagine a case raising the constitutionality of an enactment that would present a non-justiciable issue. She gave as an example a hypothetical statute purporting to award financial relief to those improperly tried of impeachment offenses, which would be non-justiciable in light of the court's opinion in Nixon versus United States. Justice Alito also filed an opinion concurring only in the judgment. He agreed that the case did not present a political question, but somewhat surprisingly, given his previous employment as a Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Office of Legal Counsel, essentially an outside assistant general counsel to the President, he commented that, quote, delineating the precise dividing line between the powers of Congress and the President with respect to the contents of a passport is not an easy matter, unquote. In addition to the President's authorities, he observed that the Constitution gave Congress a measure of authority to prescribe the contents of passports and consular reports of birth abroad under its power to regulate foreign commerce and to make a uniform rule of naturalization under Clauses 3 and 4 of Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. Justice Alito's views may have prompted the Chief Justice to decide the case on a ground about which there was more agreement. Justice Alito's views may have prompted the Chief Justice to decide the case on a ground about which there was more agreement. Justice Breyer dissented alone. Prudential considerations taken together led him to conclude that the court should not decide the case. First, the particular context of this case might require the court to evaluate foreign policy considerations. Second, he thought the countervailing interests in obtaining judicial resolution were not particularly strong, since Zivotofsky's interest was essentially ideological, rather than based on interest in property or bodily integrity. Third, the political branches of government have non-judicial methods of working out their differences, such as through budget authorizations, confirmation of personnel, committee hearings, and a host of more informal contacts. This may not be the last the court has heard of this case. The Zivotofsky's lawyer, Nathan Lewin of Washington, D.C., will continue to press his arguments in the D.C. Circuit on remand. Both he and the United States can be expected to seek certiorari to review any adverse decision. So we may yet have an opportunity to learn how Justice Alito would resolve the political branch's competing claims in this area.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.